Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And this hour on The Brian Lehrer Show, Ralph Nader, who is not running for president this year for the first time in 24 years, with his thoughts on what to do about Citizens United after this election year and more. And we continue our fall arts and entertainment preview series with none other than John Schaefer from Soundcheck with fall season music picks. And we'll get to Mr. Nader in just 60 seconds. Let me first do a little of my duty here, 1 minute's worth, and remind you that we are in our fall membership drive, and we hope that everybody who listens to WNYC on a very regular basis will help us to pay to run the place. And if that list of very regular listeners includes you, please call 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. We'll talk more about it later, but just wanted to reinforce that Pledge Week is underway and to ask you to please come through with something, maybe $5 or $10 a month, to help us pay the bills and keep independent, not-for-profit radio possible while you're listening to the show today. Thanks a lot for considering it at 1-888-376-9692. WNYC or pledge online at WNYC.org. And really, thanks a lot. And Ralph Nader is with us now. He is not running for president this year after doing so the last five election cycles, but he is urging citizens in every congressional district to organize to fight the power of corporate money on their members of Congress. And he has a new book called The 17 Solutions, Bold Ideas for Our American Future. Mr. Nader, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
Let me get a little history out of the way first, because when you come around in election season, we always get lots of Democrats piping up to say, you know, that Ralph Nader, I used to like him until he helped settle us with George W. Bush. But you and I have talked about this probably five times in the past, and people listening right now probably know your answer. So let me ask you more broadly, how do you assess the impact of your five consecutive runs for president, 1992 through 2008?
Well, first, we've documented in lawsuits and print material that this is a two-party duopoly, that it's very hard to have competitive elections and give more choices to the voters by third parties. You have ballot access obstacles. You have baseless lawsuits harassing third parties trying to get petitions on the ballot. You have the exclusion from the debates. This is not a democratic electoral process. No Western country places more obstructions to voters and more obstructions to third-party candidates getting on the ballot to give choice to voters. So we've done that. Anyway, there are other things we've done. We've gotten a lot of young people trained in clean election practices, and over the years they're beginning to run for election. The mayor of Richmond, California, over 100,000 people came out of our campaign, Gail McLaughlin, doing a very good job. And there are other collateral benefits. But apart from a Bloomberg or some mega billionaire running an independent campaign or a third-party campaign, the two parties have got the process locked up. And they even get into people's minds as if they own the voters. So anybody who challenges them siphons votes from them. So it's not a very good thing, because in this book, 17 Solutions, these are majoritarian-supported solutions, Brian. They're quite practical. They're long overdue. And yet they're never discussed by Obama or Romney.
And we'll get to tick some of them off in just a minute. But one could argue that if your runs for president have had an impact on the Democratic Party that was worth having, it was to make them hear the footsteps of an independent progressive like yourself or others in the future running to their left, and knowing what did happen in 2000, that they have to make sure to embrace the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party, to quote Howard Dean. But yeah. I wonder if you think that that has actually happened.
No, they're too invulnerable for that, and third parties can't get to the 5 or 10% to have that kind of impact like the early progressive parties and other third parties in the 19th century. They're too entrenched. That was one of the impacts that was quite surprising to us. And partly it's the voter. They want to vote for a winner. And if you're going to vote for a winner and you only got two on deck and they exclude competition and exclude from debates where people can reach tens of millions of people and voters, you're not going to have that kind of impact. And in this year, I have made many proposals which the Democrats have refused to pick up that could have landslided the Republicans. One of them, most obvious, 70% or more of the American people support a minimum wage adjusted for inflation. From 1968 to now, it would be $10.35 an hour. Instead, the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. There are 30 million workers, Brian, working between 7 and a quarter and $10 an hour. And $10 an hour would still be less than what workers made in 1968, adjusted for inflation, even though the economy is half as large in 1968 and the productivity of workers was half as large. So this is a, you know, like a slam dunk, an easy one. It stimulates the economy because people will spend that extra money. It's long overdue, and you can't get Nancy Pelosi or Senator Harry Reid or Barack Obama or anybody to even talk about it. Right near you, Chris Murphy and Elizabeth Warren, while on paper, therefore, they won't make it an issue, and it's a winning issue.
Because you think that they're too bought by the corporations who don't want to raise the minimum wage?
That's it. In fact, it's not just the power of them. It's that they want to raise as much money as the Republicans from these corporate sources, these commercial sources. And they don't want to rock the boat. But I asked them, and I've written a column on this. You go to Nader.org, by the way, you can get my column free every week. I've written a column and said, do the Democrats really want to win? And the problem with Obama is he's very redundant in his statements day after day. People are getting, you know, isn't there anything more? And Romney's taunting him, saying he doesn't have a program for the next 4 years. And on the debates, he had any number of chances of going after Romney. Romney was for inflation-adjusted minimum wage until early this year when he flip-flopped. I mean, that's a perfect argument in a debate, especially when 70% or more of the people want to catch up with 1968. And he doesn't raise the corporate crime enforcement program.
Well,
and
that,
he doesn't go after corporate welfare, subsidies, handouts, giveaways.
It certainly is one of the stories of, let's say, the last 5 years, that things that used to be bipartisan ideas, like indexing the minimum wage for inflation and the cap and trade system to stop global warming and even an individual mandate, have suddenly become these polarized things. Another of the proposals in your book for fighting corporate power is more at the local level, and that is to organize congressional watchdog groups in your neighborhood. What do you have in mind?
Yeah, that's the lever. In other words, the 17 solutions are not how to make this country so much better in long overdue practical ways, but how to get it done. And the key is Congress. Congress has got the taxing power, the spending power, you know, the war declaration power, the investigative power, the nomination power, confirmation power. It's the most powerful branch of government. By the same token, it's very small. It's 535 members, senators and representatives who put their shoes on every day like you and I. So if we can organize Congress watchdog groups with a fraction of the intensity of bird watching groups in every congressional district, that is, say, about 1,000 people who put forth an agenda, who are very organized. They give 200 hours a year. They raise $200 a year to open two offices in each congressional district. And they connect with one another in an internet age. And then they move forward with mass training sessions for citizens, with public meetings for the senators and representatives. They can turn it around. People have got to realize it's a lot easier than you think. I keep saying that because I've proved it in the past. It's a lot easier than you think to turn this country around, because the Constitution is still written, we the people, not we the corporation.
What do you think about the sincerity of economic conservatives generally, and Mitt Romney in particular, if you're willing to go there? In other words, some progressives accuse them of just doing the bidding of wealthy individuals and big corporations, and you seem to walk up to that line. But most of them, the conservatives, would get really angry at that and say, no, we have an honest difference of opinion about what's best for America's future. Lower minimum wage means more low-wage jobs rather than fewer at higher pay, lower tax rates, more oil and gas and coal development, privatizing Medicare, whatever the policies are. Do you acknowledge that you have mostly honest disagreements about what's best for the people, or do you not believe that?
Well, there are two kinds of conservatives. One is really a corporatist. That is, they'll go with what the corporations want in terms of planning the future of this country, from government, elections, economy, labor, education, you name it. Then there are the genuine conservatives who sometimes call themselves libertarian conservatives, something like Ron Paul types. And they have honest disagreements, but they also have honest agreements. For example, liberals and progressives agree with libertarian conservatives on foreign and military policy, the aggressive, on bloated military budgets. They both don't like corporate welfare, bailouts of Wall Street. They both would like to apply law and order against corporate crime. And they don't like the Patriot Act's restrictions on civil liberties. So you see, there's a significant convergence and honest disagreement, which I think is by any token fact deprivation. I mean, when they say that a lower minimum wage creates more low-income jobs, the logic of that is why don't you take it down to the serf slavery level? That's not the humane policy. The policy in this country is to increase worker pay so they can spend more, so they can create more jobs, so they can invigorate the economy. That's been the trajectory until the Walmart era of low-wage economy policies started taking hold. And that was possible because although the head of Walmart makes $11,000 an hour, 8 hours a day, he's got a million of his workers making $7.25, $7.50, $8, $9, $10 an hour.
We just have 2 minutes left. Let me ask you two things real quick. One, are you endorsing for president this year? We had this year's Green Party candidate, Jill Stein, on the show just yesterday. Are you endorsing her?
I'm not endorsing, but for people who are frustrated with the two major candidates, I'm saying you got choices now. You can go Green, you can go Justice Party with Rocky Anderson, you can go Libertarian Party, or you can go Constitution Party. That's your alternative, short of writing in your own choice on the ballot.
And you're willing to risk electing Romney if a lot of people do that in Florida and Ohio?
I believe people should vote their conscience, Brian. Vote for who they believe in. That's the only way we get a good democracy. Once we start doing tactical votes, we lose our bargaining power, and both parties get worse and worse. Senator Jacob Javits would be considered a left Democrat today, and he was a Republican in the 60s and 70s. That's how the political spectrum has shifted. By the way, any of you want an autographed copy of 17 Solutions, just go to 17solutions.com, and I'll autograph a copy and send it to you. It's a great invigorator, a great morale builder, and it keeps people's feet on the ground to turn this country around in the name of we the people.
Ralph Nader, his new book, The 17 Solutions, Bold Ideas for Our American Future. Thanks for the conversation. I appreciate it.
Thanks as always, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Up next, we continue our Pledge Drive Week series of previews of the fall season in arts and entertainment with our own John Schaefer on the fall concert and music release season. Stay with us.